Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy taped show, Saturday night. Of course it's live right now. Of course it is. Last night, it's November 15th, 2008, November 14th, 2008, Friday night at 6 p.m., we had the great Peter Kulish go to that archive. It was a great show on magnetism and how it works in the body. We had several people that have injuries that called in, and Peter was able to help them and prescribe certain kinds of therapies. Actually suggest, prescribe is not a good word for a non-medical doctor, which he is not. So anyway, tonight we're going to consume another tape. We're going to go right on into the seminar series, exciting tape series that we're getting on BBS Radio for no cost, just the cost of the archive. And if you buy this from Pyridine, you're spending $100. So here we go. Let's find what Dr. Bell's doing tonight. What are you doing, Dr. Bell?
Grab it into the ground wire down on the...
Where's it? Yeah, well, that, what's that doing?
Where's the outside ground?
Not doing much then, it's just kind of hanging off your line, you know.
So it definitely needs to be grounded?
Yeah.
And what's, how much area does this cover?
Sounds like we're doing a little wire hook up here.
It'll cover the whole house if you wire it into it, but something that big, you might just go out here, maybe one wire there, but I'd go out to the circuit box and find the ground where it comes in. Ground the whole house.
We're talking about the hooking up the star warp that gets rid of all the ELF in the refrigerator. And boy, these star warps are starting to really work. There's a lot more ELF. We're really noticing a difference with them now. Update.
That goes to all these grounds. Don't put the hot wire to it. Put that into this thing and then hook the other side up to the ground and your whole house can be done. And you can position it anyway. This is the solar orb. This is used over your desk or somewhere. It stimulates mental activity. You can put different colors in some stones in it to create a different... It works like kind of like a receptor, but kind of over your head. So if you want to increase your mental capacity or something when you're studying here today, or something, just put a green or a red stone in it.
Why don't you use several of them all on one?
Some people
do. Is it okay?
Yeah.
Doesn't
hurt anything. Now, usually with people, with their systems, when they get a whole system in, they'll have all kinds of gems and rocks and things they've collected over the years. When you get the system, then they'll find a place for every one of them. It all fits somewhere. There won't be anything laying on a shelf anymore. This is the ion shower, which I was telling you about yesterday, that cleanses the aura. We didn't have this operating last night because we didn't have a power supply. Now, the master crystal is a pretty interesting phenomenon. This is one that we sold to Europe. It's about a 300-pounder. Master crystal is the central storage battery for the entire system. It's the best way to describe it. And you have to protect it during the full moon. So during the full moon, the amnion sits right on top of it. You saw that one hanging up in my room there. It's on a pulley. During the full moon, it comes down and grounds it out. And the crystal that I had, probably wants me to tell the story, but the crystal story is that the ones in my living room, that was the first crystal I ever owned. You know, that was back in the 70s, and I didn't know much about crystal. Then we had just recently gotten the irradiator from the Pleiadians, and we didn't know much about that either. You know, matter of fact, we didn't know much about anything in those days. And, so, this doctor was dying of cancer, and I guess he was my first crystal teacher. And so he sold me this crystal, a big thing in the living room there, for $80. And I thought that was a good buy. I didn't know what it was, but I knew it was big, and it had a good shape to it, and for $80, I didn't think I'd go wrong on it, you know. So I brought that thing home and set it on the floor. That was the only crystal in the living room. And in those days, I think there probably like maybe one, might not even been any radiators in there then, or maybe one or two in there. Because we weren't learning about, see, the Pleiades taught us a lot about nature spirits in the late, early 80s. They gave us a lot of this mechanical technology in the 70s, but we really didn't know what we were doing with it. And we fooled around with it, we were getting radiation off of it and stuff, but we weren't getting grounded with it, we weren't centering it, we sure as hell weren't programming anything. So, here comes this master crystal, and I put it in the living room to look pretty neat, and one of my friends came over, the one that works the Dalai Lama now, his name is Ron Spencer, and so he came over, and he saw that crystal on the floor, he looked at me, and he knew that well that I didn't know what it was, and so he said, I'll give you $500 for that crystal. So immediately my dollars and cents mind jumped up. I said, that's $420 profit, you know. So he wrote me a check for $500 and off went that crystal. I thought I was really privileged to make God son have to get more of these things, you know, and they call this money out of. So he took off with it, and it was gone for about 3 or 4 weeks. And all of a sudden, I go through my living room, and I felt like missing in that living room. And I felt empty, and I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. And so finally, I figured it was this silly crystal. It needed to be there. And that was really a strange feeling with that thing out of there, because I didn't notice it when it was there, but it was gone. I started to notice it. So he was on his way to Hawaii. And I think it was in 1981. And he said, you didn't need that crystal anymore. I wanted to know if I wanted to buy it back. Actually, he never needed it in the first place. And I said, yeah, I can use that back. So he said, well, I'll drop it off on the way to Hawaii. So he showed up at my house a few days later, and I had $500 bills sitting on that counter there for my crystal back, because I knew what it was for then. That was kind of how I started into it. So crystals are really important. And it really becomes important to pick the right one that you for yourself. I know I had an experience in the mid-80s with one of the Tibetan Buddhists over in Kauai. I went to a seminar over there. And he sent one of his monks over to my seminar in Kauai. He says, Fred Bell, I had this vision that you're going to find me a master crystal for my temple over here. I says, okay, I'll find you one. Because now I knew what they were. So I went down to Arkansas with my friend Jimmy Coleman, and he had a 700-pound in there. So I called him up, and he immediately flew in his disciple and helped me for Zion. And she saw that, and had a picture of it over to the head Buddha. He said, this is it. And about 3 weeks later, they were shipping that thing to Hawaii. They got a big temple built around, they shoot lasers into it, turn them on, all kinds of stuff. It's a pretty interesting crystal. Made the newspapers over there many times.
Very happy to say it's the crystal mine.
In Jesseville, which is right by Hot Springs. There's only one mine that produces these large ones. Boy, has the price gone up over the years for these things. Man. I sold his for $35,000, and the same crystal today would bring $250,000. It's just a nice, they just skyrocket because they're so scarce.
Did I share my crystal story then?
Yeah, share one. I didn't know hardly anything about crystals about a month ago.
Yeah.
And Freddie just got back from Arkansas and said, well, we're going to unload these barrels of crystals. So he had 5 barrels full of crystals. We're out there all afternoon just unpacking these things and pulling sawdust out of the barrels, just having a ball. And he's just like, wow, look at this. And he forgot to put it in there, so he didn't know anything.
Yeah.
Everything we pulled out was a mystery. So I'm going, oh, geez, I really kind of like this one. And I said that over to the side. And I go, well, I really kind of like this one. Before I knew it, I had several $1,000 of crystals kind of set up.
Yeah.
I picked my master. I didn't even know what I was doing. He didn't say a word. And I picked my
master.
I loaded. I picked a huge cluster. I picked a pocket crystal. I picked a programmer for my system. Anyway, I had a whole bunch of stuff over there. And I took it all home with me. And the next day, I was feeling ridiculous for having spent so much money. And
oh, yeah.
I brought one of the clusters back.
Yeah, he wasn't trade it back yet.
I was going to trade it back in. I figured, you know, I better get some other cargo or something else first, you know. And I started feeling a loss of that thing right away. A couple hours later, Fred called me and said, you know, that crystal you brought back is fine over here. I said, I'll be right there. And I swear to God,
it came right over.
I still the crystal was running around town.
That was really
that's a cruiser.
That
came right back and got that.
That is probably really a true story, because when I got my first cluster, I said to the guy on the street, it was in the streets of San Francisco, it's a big cluster and a big Herkimer diamond in a big one sitting there. And I said, well, how much for the Herkimer diamond? So he told me, and I paid $80 for the Herkimer diamond, which really would be big now. The clusters were sitting there. And I said, well, how much for them? And he said, well, he says, that'll be about $130. And I said, oh, God. I said, I truly, truly want this. but I said, I really have got only $25 on me. And he said, well, that's out of the question. I said, okay. And I walked down the street. He goes, oh, my God. And he came running after me. And he said, you got it for $25. I said, what are you talking about? And he says, I just couldn't stand the vibrations I was getting from the crystal. It truly belongs to you.
Yeah.
That's it was just like that.
Yeah, these things are incredible.
Yeah,
they really are. They're
really, it's a true story.
Yeah, and when you get into it, it's, and then you start linking this whole energy to the system, and you're linking that to the earth, and you start networking. You don't have to go to the movies anymore.
Well, I heard a saying that the crystals believe that the human beings are mythical beings since they have such a what, short lifespan.
Probably true. Yeah, we probably are just like
a
Vodra.
The
Vodra, because you don't
think
you
exist.
Yeah, you probably think you exist. Considering they might live a couple of million years or more. There. There you can see. The reason I got that up, this one's set up right or not. No, it's not. See, there's no local stones in it, so it's useless the way it is now. See, here we have two local stones in this one. This is over in Germany where that was done. When you work with nature spirits, which is part of this thing, you need to acknowledge them. And that's why it's very important to put local stones into this. Well, my wife is a Gemini. Geminis, to me, I think have the hardest time working around these systems because they're not very grounded individuals anyway. And around the systems are completely upside down most of the time. That's the example of last night, not even able to control the incense. But every time we have a group up there, you know, at the house, my wife screws something up big time and she just loses it. I mean, I don't think I'd want to be that high, you know, to where she just loses it. But it's funny to watch her, you know. She's working as hard as she can. It's not her fault. It's the fact of evolution. But she has a hell of a time struggling. Keep that. And somehow or other, I've always attracted Geminis. And I've had several Gemini women when I was a bachelor in that house, and they all had the same problem with it. They just completely got ungrounded. So so you need your local stones. And we use two in the self-help system. We use a small master crystal. And we use two regular crystals. And then we use an amplifier, which is that one up in the middle. And then up on top of it, when you're running a bigger, you know, whatever color you want to center yourself on, that goes up in here, and it's easier to use the receptor than anything else, because it's a big pain in the rear end to find a gemstone hanging in there because it falls off. The receptor is fine, so usually people end up with a set of receptors to fool around with their system. And for that, you don't need a silver or a solid gold one. Just a little inexpensive receptors are just adequate to do that job, you know. Also, there's a phenomenon, well, I'll get into that in a little bit, but it's a little bit further into nature. I don't know, I shouldn't talk about that yet. It has to do with a fire star. The Amion, when we use that, this is one of the most fascinating devices that we make. The standard configuration that we've been doing for people is a clockwise, counterclockwise, clockwise spiral of energy. And if you look at the configuration of where the pyramids are on the Amion, everything is drawn in the center, and it's completely the opposite. If you look, it's the opposite of the star orb over here. The star orb, the points are opposing, and the stainless steel wire to cancel. Whereas we've got all the apexes of all these pyramids drawing directly in. And then we've got an octahedral linkage between the top one and the bottom. So everything is drawn into that center piece. And when you mine quartz from the northern hemisphere, it's clockwise. It's in the healing vibration. When you bring stuff up from the south of the equator, it's counterclockwise. And when you marry the two, you have an extraterrestrial vibration that creates that ET, that inward energy. So we put the cluster now in the center. The next generation of Amions that we're going to be developing, we're going to use in the center not just one type of stone, but we're going to use 50 different kinds of stones from all over the world, representing all the different energies simultaneously. That's our next evolution that we're going into now with these. These can be used with one irradiator, or they can be used with four or seven. in the self-help system, this is positioned behind the irradiator with the center part of it directly lined up with the center part of the irradiator.
In the court system, does the negative press, it is not in the center?
No, it doesn't matter. Where, as long as it's in your, over your master crystal. These different projectors that you saw last night, we use those to enhance the lighting of the room. They're relatively inexpensive for what they do, but they're not lasers.
This is some of the seminars that we've done in the past. This is a photograph of some of the energy, the actual trapezoid wave that comes off of the center of the radiator. It's a diamond-shaped waveform. This is the system that was in Hawaii. This is an old system. It's 1981. There's a picture of Ron, and his kid was born in that system, a little child there. I think he's had two or three children born in the system now. He's got his own temple that the Dalai Lama gave him in Tibet, Kathmandu. But this is the system that the Dalai Lama first walked into when he entered our lives in 81. There's that master crystal. And it was in a house in the northern shore of Oahu. And in fact, you can see the evolution of the Amion. And that, in those days, it didn't have anything in the center. You put your own in. You had a crystal ball on the top and some other stuff stuffed in it. That's how the evolution came.
So you got like two capstones?
Yeah, a lot of people do that. They'll use two or three capstones and two or three orbs on the top. It shotguns the energy up more in the whole system. It pumps it up. It's not just limited to what I'm just showing you, the basics. There's so many configurations of systems that...
So if you put a capstone on the top part, what would that do?
Well, it amplifies it. It's like pumping up the kundalini energy more when you sleep. I wouldn't start with it. There, he's got one of the older fire stars on top of that. You can see it on the ceiling. This is the configuration that TM uses too up at Mount Aceto, similar to this. Now this thing right here, this is called a kinesia triangle. And yesterday when I was talking about illusion and breaking through the second ether, well, this is typical. Most people will see a white triangle in the center, because they're programmed to the physical plane, to the limitations. But there's no white triangle there. If you look at it correctly, you'll see three, like Pac-Man, and three separate little angle-shaped things, and the other thing goes away immediately. And this is what the champagne reflector does, that unit that the angel was flying out of that I showed you. And what it does is it has three lasers on it. So you maintain the hydrogen frequency all through the night, as it was in the day, which breaks the illusion. And what happens is when the sun goes down, the red laser's on the timer. And so the red laser was already on. Like in a little while, when the sun goes down, that, in my house, automatically the laser will turn on. Then at 9 o'clock at night, a green laser comes on from another source and fires into that thing. And then at midnight, a gold laser goes on. And they all three stay on until 3 o'clock in the morning when they separate again. And this pumps an energy down into the whole house, to the whole system, which breaks all this illusionary stuff down in the visual cortexes of the brain. And allows you to see through the different ethers. These slides we saw already. This is the fire star orb. Now this is an entirely different procedure here. And I'll cover a little of it, and then she'll probably talk about it later on. But when you get into the fire star, you're not dealing with a quad system or a system three anymore. You're dealing with an entirely different energy. And this is like I call a sampling energy, and it has nothing to do with the core of the earth. If you were to look at a human being has seven chakras, seven endocrine glands. Six of them secrete hormones, creating a positive effect. And the seventh one, pineal gland, which controls the death clock and also the intuition clock in the body. You want to keep it quiet. You don't want to secrete anything.
because if it starts secreting stuff, it'll kill you, because it's been primarily serotonin. So, in the angel kingdom, or bee kingdom, you have an angel of the flower. The angel of the flower, right? The angel of the flower, most of these angels are pretty often second ether. They're not astral creatures, they're second ether. They're hard to see. You know, sometimes people see them on drugs, sometimes people see them in meditation. They're second ether beings. And they have six etheric organs in their bodies representing seven levels of, or six levels of consciousness. And then they have a seventh organ, which is the pineal gland, like we do, except in the case of the bee kingdom, the angel of the bee, the flower angel, it has an external pineal gland. It's not part of the angel's immediate body. It's not externalized. And in the bee kingdom, this externalization of this organ becomes known as the queen bee. So the angel is pretty much it's captured by this queen bee, by this way this process works. And each angel in this bee kingdom is attuned to a frequency. You know, like we have different races, the angels here have different frequencies. And let's just say this is a clover angel, right? So what happens is the clover angel is tuned in. And it's an etheric being. Etheric beings are very physical. And so what happens is you have a clover over here starting to manifest, you know, into a clover blossom, right? And then pretty soon over here, you have another. And then over here, you have another. Well, when these reach certain vibrations with the earth, it becomes time for the bee to pollinize the clover. But what happens is, the queen bee isn't going to go anywhere because she can't. She's part of the angel here. Unless the angel goes, the queen stays. So the queen has to send out a worker bee. Well, the worker bee is too heavy to fly. You know, a bee is 50 times too heavy to fly. So theoretically, they can't fly at all. I don't know if you knew that or not. Bees are not aerodynamically stable. They're even worse than helicopters. Okay? So what has to happen is that the angel has to focus itself. And what the angel will do, there'll be flowers over here. And as the flowers start to come up into the right pattern, the angel then will send out its aura. It will transmit its aura frequency out like this. It'll start sending it out to this flower over here like that. And it goes out like this. It goes out like that. It goes out and it forms this pattern that looks very much like its wings. You know, it's called wings. So the angel's energy is starting to look like that, like a butterfly. And all of these points, when there's enough of these points connected to the aura, and the aura is grounding out through the pollinization frequencies, this becomes a superhighway of energy. Okay? So now the bee can get on here and fly the superhighway of energy out to these flowers. You know, grab the pollen and bring it back. And of course, when the bee comes in, he's very heavy, and he has to purify himself before he gets in the presence of the angel, right? So he comes in to the door, and he drops off the propolis part of the honey process, comes into the comb, does a dance, raises the energy of the honey, and then goes to higher frequency and carries the royal jelly to the queen. So it's a three-stage process just to make it to the, to get pure enough to reach the queen. If you were to take a camera and put a tower up above the beehive, 500 feet high, like this, and if you were to take all of these bees that are here flying, put some kind of paint on them, you know, where they kind of glow, like day glow. And if you were to take a camera, a still life camera, and do still life photography of the path of all these bees, guess what you'll see?
after what?
Perfect black painter.
Perfect angel. He paints in all the missing points. Well, I presented this to the University of Hamburg in the mid-80s. Guess what they did? They took a picture of an angel.
They painted the bees.
They painted the bees. The Germans will do anything, and they did it. Put a 500-foot tower over there just to prove me wrong. Guess what? They took a picture of an angel.
Yeah. Like a standard-looking angel with a humanoid body and big wings. And
well, kind of like this. The bees were flying all the time. You know, and then they could see the central part, but always centered around the queen bee, you know. Because that was kind of locked, and it would, you know, it would move this way, and it would be out this way. And see, what happens is the bee, let's say this bee is meeting some resistance out here from a predator, right? Well, he'll just sacrifice himself. It's no big deal, because immediately, the whatever essence, this is a group oversoul phenomenon here. So what happens is the bee will lose its body. It'll come right back in the hive. The energy will, and another one will be born. It'll be the same bee in a new body. It'll change its body, like, really fast. So they have their own religion, and it's a microcosm of what really goes on in the macrocosm. It's so cool how they work. Samyazi told me about that in 1979, and finally in 1988 or so, somebody finally did it, you know, verify that. But this has happened a lot of times.
Is that why when you see a slow motion?
Huh?
Is that why when you see slow motion film of a bee flying, it looks like it's just kind of tumbling through space?
Yeah.
It's almost going end over end.
Yeah,
it's just looks like it's being pulled along a wire.
Yeah, it's drunk in the energy of the angel's aura. It's just totally an ecstasy.
You should be arrested for drinking.
Yeah, drinking. And look what the honey does, you know, when you do when you eat the stuff. I mean, it cranks your energy up pretty good. You know, and the propolis is great for infectious wounds and stuff, you know. So this is, you can go off your nature and learn all. I mean, it's Pleiadians, so they spend most of their time in nature, not building spaceships, but and flying around. They spend a lot of time at home on their home world with horticulture, because that being next to nature is next to God, according to Samyasi, and I kind of agree with her, you know. So the fire star works like that. The fire star tunes into five different chakras simultaneously, and it amplifies you. Franco will explain it all, but when you start bringing your aura frequencies up into that, it will automatically, almost on a holographic level, tune you into other entities, and it becomes an excellent channeling device, an excellent ET contact device. Many, 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 many spaceships have been photographed over these things, seen over them. So, I'll let her explain it all, but she doesn't like to do the de-explanation for some reason. I don't know how to do that.
Why is it we see so few good pictures of craft? I don't know. I've seen a lot of good ones. I think most of the time people photograph them, they don't know what they're doing, you know? Or they're in a hurry, they don't happen to have the camera set up. Like Billy Myers, those are good.
Yeah.
These are pictures of scalar waves done in the laboratory, but I don't know. I don't think we're going to see anything here because...
Well, the government gets all the pictures.
Well, the government puts out fakes, too, you know? I mean, there's a lot of those that go out.
Billy Myers, what did he write? Did he write anything?
Not very much. A little bit. He wrote 17 volumes of German Swiss notes from Samyasi, which has been published in a book that he's laying on the floor. It was here yesterday. Yeah. There's scalar waves on here. In other words, you can photograph these points with infrared photography, but there's not enough. I can't show them here because it's infrared and it's very dark. And this shows up green, and there's this room. Handle it, so you won't be able to see that. This is Ralph Sierra. I used to work with him down in Puerto Rico. He used used magnets and our pyramids to heal athletes, you know, so, you know, like O.J. Simpson or somebody was.
He had some good luck with them, huh?
Yeah, he worked on Joe Namath and all these guys, you know. Get him back and get sports injuries back in the season without having to lose a season. This is the radar that I worked on when I was in the That's an ANFPS 35. Yeah, for no other reason, you don't want to sleep in a pyramid. That one right there, because that's 5 megawatts of radiation coming out of that baby, and they're all over the place. It's early warning radar. These are what's used in Bontoc. This is the same radar that brought down the spacecraft in New Mexico and Laredo and Aztec, Roswell. Same radar. That radar. That model. One time we scrambled some jets up in Northern California. We scrambled a bunch of jets
out of Hamilton one night for a 60-mile-an-hour unidentified flying object over the ocean, and they flew out. They couldn't find it, so they flew back, and they found the Greyhound bus with people in it. What was happening is we were getting SCIP. SCIP is when you got a cloud surface, the radar, 5 million watts hits that, it turned back around on a bus, and people were getting hit with huge amounts of radiation that was showing up on our screen. If you took an egg and threw it up at the front of that thing, it'd come down so damn hard that you couldn't even eat it, you know. That's how much radiation that thing put out. And that's 9 stories tall, the bottom of that antenna. That antenna is 500 feet wide, 466 feet across.
The antenna is 9 stories tall?
No, the building that it's sitting on. Oh. This is 9 stories here. I don't know, 100 some feet to this. Wow. And that's 466 feet, so a man would be about like that.
What's the effect of that much radiation in the body?
Death.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Question.
What's Emma was breaking? I don't know. She's ready now, so whenever. Half an hour. This is when I worked at NASA. With Wernher von Braun.
Saturn.
Yeah, we put this on the moon. This is one that we started building. I was working with Chanel Toto on this one. There's a guy up on there. Titanium. I don't know what it was supposed to be. I worked on it and changed it around, changed designs, and finally the thing got confiscated. For what reason, I have no idea, but it was a giant 80-foot flying saucer, you know.
Yeah. Obviously a spacecraft.
Now here's one at Area 51. That's a government built unit. Now, where's that picture at I was handing you? I want to get that back.
Crystal.
It's up there on the...
Those
crystals look like they're triangular crystals.
Yeah, they look like rutilated crystals.
So this is the ship that the government built?
Yeah, this one, the government built it and a friend of mine flew it. He wore one of these suits, these zero-G suits. You have to get inside of it. It's real weird because you have to breathe this liquid inside of you. It's a hydrogen, a fluorocarbon.
A liquid?
Yeah, you breathe it into your lungs, you drown, literally. That way your lungs don't collapse, because it pulls 33 Gs sideways. Yeah, that's the inside of it, the drawings of it.
So you're breathing through the liquid.
Yeah, you breathe it in. He said it was a horrible feeling when I put the suit on. Yeah. You had to just trust him, you know. I mean, he thought he was going to die. And, you know, you've seen articles in popular...
They did it in a movie.
Yeah, they do it there. There's pictures of rats and stuff running around in fish aquariums. The popular science, you see it. Popular mechanics. There's a rat running around in a fish aquarium, you know, breathing the shit. But he said the worst part of it is when he got out of that damn thing and had to get up and breathe air again. Switching back, he says it's even worse.
Yeah.
He says you just burn. And he says he threw up, and he said he couldn't. He had a hangover for a week. He said it took him a month to really recover from it. It was just a mess.
But once you acclimate to the liquid, it's worse.
It's
coming
off. Yes, it's not hard coming off of it. Yeah, it's a miserable deal either way. It's called a zero G suit in the Air Force. The government gives the money.
I imagine you'd be deep down the ocean for that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't get it. What? So this is. This is probably half the people in here who did that. These are implants from the Greys. This is a CAT scan of how they detect them. And about 400,000 people have these now. Lighting is so bad in here. This is this. There it is, right here's one. And the other one's right across from it. There's two implants in this girl. This was done over the Presbyterian Hospital in Los Alamos.
When you say 400,000, is that a rough estimate, or are there that many?
Well, there was 330 a while back, you know.
Actual confirmation.
Yeah. No. I mean, I remember a few years ago down at Scripps, San Diego, all the medical doctors were being neurotic and stuff, and they start suspecting brain tumors. And so they run into the UCSD medical labs down there, the radiology labs. And I remember talking to all the radiologists, and they were getting all kinds of people with alien objects in their heads, and they
didn't know what they were, and they didn't know how to get them out. They weren't cancers. They just didn't know what they were. I saw scores of reports. Now I went over to Scripps, to the Navy over there. But there's two in this person. She was abducted in 1980. And there's a lot of people that have those.
So how do they abduct you physically?
Physical abduction. No, physical.
Is the theory that this is a control mechanism or an experiment?
Well, I think it's part, if you look at it, the big picture, if you look at Stephen Whitney, but it was in 1984, shooting people, he wrote a diary, a big diary, which was on ABC, National Life, called the Whitney Diary or some damn thing, and it was on prime time. And he, 14 people I think he killed from the clock tower of the University of Austin, including his wife. And he wrote a diary saying he was going mad. But what came out of that was that, let's ban assault weapons. So what I think they do is they implant certain people, and then they go out and they have them go kill a bunch of people, like in these, fast food chain shootings and stuff. And then they just use it to further tighten up the Constitution. That seems to be what the whole drift of it is. And it's just part of, they're like the Malathion helicopters. They're black helicopters, and they're owned by Evergreen. Evergreen's owned by Ad Hoc, and Ad Hoc is the group, they're part of the Trilads. So, and now Evergreen is getting so gutsy, they're advertising right on television, on the Taiwanese Airlines, Evergreen, on your television, on your commercials.
Is this part of Roach's teaching?
The what?
Roach? What's his name?
Lyndon LaRoche.
Yeah, LaRoche.
He's into it, but he's not the only one. I'm not a follower of his, but I think he puts a lot
of
stuff.
I have some of the literature from him.
Yeah.
And that other alternative group, too. It's far out, isn't it?
Yeah. This is crop circles. These were Andromeda here. This is a holographic circle. The pyramid in the center represents the constitution of the grave. And what that crop circle says is that we'll become aware of extraterrestrials through the unification of and understanding of our own systems in our body and the graves. If you look at those three drawings, this crop circle, I guess, was done about,
when was this crop circle done? I think about 85, 86, somewhere in there. Very nice crop circle. And I particularly liked it. It wasn't hard
it
to figure it out.
It almost looks like a power grid, isn't it? Sorry.
Exactly the same as this, these circles, but they represent the chakras. This one, I have this drawing in here, those three. So it was easy to figure out what that was, and this is, of course, this could be, the creator could be infinity. There's two circles there, and then this is a magnesium atom, which is the core of a grave. So the consciousness of extraterrestrials definitely is coming because of the grave, even though they're trying to be incognito. So it's an interesting crop circle. The British did an awful lot of analysis on this particular one. But you should see the new ones now. The new ones are really out there. I think this one's heavy. They're much heavier now.
Yeah. to go a little bit more into the systems here before we have lunch.
When we position,
first thing we do is to find the roof center and then go to north. And the bottom of the irradiator, the bottom part of the irradiator, is set to exact north. Then we come 90 degrees and we set another one over here, another one over here, another one over here. So all of these megawarps are aligned to magnetic north. Then we push two out and two in, which creates the field that we want, which creates like this kind of a field out, like that. That's kind of the field that it produces. If you don't have an Omnion, you can still make the system work, but what happens is, during the full moon, you need all the irradiators in. And then during the new moon, you need to physically turn all the irradiators out. That's a lot of work to switch these things around. Yeah. But if you look at how they're made over there, they'll swivel. So if you can't do that, then people end up knocking them over. I've gone through lots of them. Initial turns. You know, are you going to put local stones in this one? You haven't forgotten about that, right? And what are these doing? Okay, so I don't want blocks. This will turn in any direction you want. Now, if you end up in a position like this, you have to taper the something right here to keep it stable. But that's the way they were designed to turn like this. Now, when you go into the systems three, it's a little bit different. Systems three, we go the compass to the north. Okay, and the first thing we want to do is we want to define, you know, the pyramid defines a circle. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you brought your compass. Yeah, that's a nice one. Did you find an extra one of those?
No, I'll get you one.
That is the best compass for setting up a system there is on the planet, the one he's got there. I can show it. Yeah, let me have that. This is exactly what you need. Because you can align it with the compass, and you get your alignment, and then you can just put the irradiator right next to it, for the plastic plate, and so you don't have to guess. So you put this guy right here, to the north, right? And the pyramid defines the circle, so you come out to the north, right out here, and this becomes time zone one. So you put your first irradiator there. Then what you do is you want to define a circle, right? Which is 22 over 7, so this is 52 degrees. So if you come up on the compass, you measure off, you come down here to the center, exactly there, and you get 52 degrees coming up there like this, boom. You put up the second irradiator, it becomes time zone 2. Then you get on the line again, okay? Come over here. You mark off another 52 degrees. Boom. You come out here and you got time zone 3. Line that to the north. You get back on here again. Come out 52 degrees. And just keep doing this all the way around. This is the coolest compass for doing this. You can actually get a good, even do a drawing this way. Like that.
Where did you find that?
This compass? I got it from... He has it over there. I don't know where he got it from.
Where did you get it?
That's in New York City.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is even good to demonstrate how this is done. 6. Last one is 7. Not quite got that right, but it's close here. So then you got 7 different time zones, and so you have 7 irradiators. And each 52 degrees, you know, defines a circle when you do it 7 times. That's really the way the mathematics work. So now you have 7 of these guys.
So what you get all your local stones in, this is times three, time zone three, this is time zone four, time zone five, T6, those are seven, I didn't need this one. I had an extra one in there. Okay, this would be T7 right over here. So what you want to do, depending on whether you're going forward in time with your body, you just go through the chakras. Remember yesterday I showed you how that, where we had the body, there's seven chakras, one for each consciousness, and the moon puts the pressure, and then the planets define the frequencies. So you just tune the planets in here with a stone for each color of the planet, for each color of the chakra. So you start out T1 over here would be a diamond. And you come over here, and you have a
sapphire.
No, sapphire would be further down. You can go from a diamond to a ruby to an emerald, then to a sapphire to a citron. And then back up to a violet stone or amethyst. And depending on which direction you go, will run your consciousness. Then you hook all these things together with a wire, and then I'll connect with a little wire, special wire. You know, we still didn't get you that wire yet, you know that? Before you leave, remind me.
He got it, didn't
he? I got it last
night. Yeah, he got it last night.
Okay. Uh-huh. You hook that wire under the power supply and run this thing up to about 50,000 volts. With all your crystal in it, and you have your master crystal somewhere in there, your omnion somewhere in there, and that goes to ground. And you saw that table last night, it had all these different crystals.
Mm-hmm.
All those are sitting in the system there. They're male, female crystals. And they act as an amplifier and a storage battery, and this thing will transmit consciousness programming anywhere you want it to. You can have all of the radiators pointing in, you have them all pointing out. At the harmonic convergence, we had them all pointing. This is one of the things that one of the guys did at the harmonic convergence, because you can really do some networking with these things. We had all the radiators pointing clockwise, like this. We were up on top of the Jack Tar Hotel in San Francisco, and we're out pointing like that. And so this was a German guy. He was pretty sharp. I get a lot of ideas from other people on how to use these systems. And he came up with this. He put the master crystal right in the center of the system.
Well, that's the end of this session. So anyhow, next week we'll continue on about how we levitated 65 people in San Francisco. Have a great evening. Thank you for making this the hottest show in the network. Bye.